an important day. Northern Ireland trapped permanently in the EU customs union. When would any other country ever give up part of its territory as part of trade talks? This would completely undermine Northern Ireland's status as an integral part of the UK. We must not go down this route. The stark concerns from the former Secretary of State, Owen Paterson. And as a Tory, he is sending his warnings to the government. The DUP has said they will not tolerate staying in the EU customs union. Arlene Foster has said she could not accept reported plans of a customs border in the Irish Sea. But that's the same Arlene Foster who promised no regulatory alignment, making Northern Ireland different from GB. And then she did a U-turn on that. So this is a defining day for Northern Ireland and its future, according to many. We need your reaction today. We're going to hear what this deal is as it unfolds throughout the rest of the day, hopefully by tonight. Let's find out if we have a clue what might be in it. The man who might know is our economics and business editor, John Campbell, who is in Brussels. Do we have any inkling yet, John? Good morning.
I'm doing the same guesswork that I've been doing for about the past 3 or 4 days, just on the basis of what Michel Barnier told EU foreign ministers yesterday. We know the fundamentally big issue here is around this customs plan, because the UK position, the DUP position, is that Northern Ireland must leave the EU's customs union along with the rest of the UK. The EU's position is that there cannot be any new customs borders, checks or controls on the island of Ireland, so it is how you square that circle. The idea which has been floating about is what is known as a customs partnership, where Northern Ireland would leave the EU's customs union. It would remain part of the UK's customs territory, but the authorities and businesses in Northern Ireland would effectively have to act as a sort of customs agent or customs officer on behalf of the EU, so that goods coming in to Northern Ireland from Great Britain and then heading on into the Republic or the single market, the actual customs processes would take place at the Irish Sea border. Northern Ireland authorities would make sure the correct tariffs had been collected for goods, whether they were travelling to Northern Ireland or to the rest of the EU. This sounds very complicated. It is complicated. And that is why there is great difficulty in trying to reach a deal on it.
But in all but name, John, would this be Northern Ireland in some type of customs union?
With the EU?
Yes.
Well, no, there's a very kind of clear legal definition of being in a customs union. So if we are out of the EU's customs union, if we are not basically part of their tariff policy, but we are administering some EU procedures, that is us legally out of the EU's customs union, but we are helping them to administer their customs union at our border. Now, that would be a clever bit of negotiation should it be pulled off. But clearly there's difficulties on both sides with this. One, the DUP don't want to be pushed, I think, very much further in terms of Irish Sea checks. And secondly, the EU needs to be clear that this is operationally workable for them and won't open up a big smuggling back door into their customs union. I think you identified correctly at the start of the programme there that the DUP have already made a significant move here, because they accepted that not just for agricultural goods and animals, but also for other manufactured goods, Northern Ireland would effectively stay in the EU's single market. That would mean that goods coming into Northern Ireland from Great Britain would have to be subject to declarations, and they could also be subject to checks and controls, mainly for the food products. So that principle has been conceded. So you can see that it's a short hop to saying, OK, if we're going to have a declaration which tells you, you know, what goods are coming in, you just add a couple of lines to the form which would contain the customs information to make sure the correct tariff is being paid depending on where the good is due to end up.
And all of a sudden Northern Ireland is being treated differently than the rest of the UK. And that might be just a couple of lines, and it might be just language, but to many people in Northern Ireland it's much more than just lines or language in a document, John.
But does it administering customs duties on behalf of the EU undermine people's unionism or constitutional sense of themselves any more than the fact that we currently look at the paperwork for cows arriving into Larne from the rest of the UK? So Northern Ireland is already treated differently in some respects in terms of intra-UK trade. This would clearly change the scale and scope of that, But the principle, certainly, around some sort of new checks and controls was conceded in terms of the single market. This would add to them in terms of the customs union. And it's, you know, it's a matter for I suppose, each individual person about, you know, what that means to them.
Daniel in Belfast, what's it mean to you?
Well, I would like to say, Stephen, that the people in Belfast, well, I come from Belfast, so I would speak on behalf of my community, come from West Belfast and Nicholas' point of view, is the people are saying that the Good Friday Agreement, which everybody sat down and agreed on, didn't matter if you were Protestant or Catholic, Loyalist or Nationalist, what it meant was is that you had to agree to a Good Friday Agreement. Everybody made it legally binding. That's what we thought. Everything was good. Patent reforms had come in. Protestant community got a big handshake. All the people who were Protestant in the RUC, they got massive redundancies. They got big retirement packages. The same as the prison officers, they got big redundancies, got massive packages when they retired. And then the RUC men were being re-employed then.
Daniel, let's focus on what we're talking about today.
Yes, but what I'm saying is about the Good Friday Agreement is that everybody's arguing that the Good Friday Agreement is being dismantled, right? And some people are saying it's not being upheld. Well, I can say clearly it is being dismantled. Because if you look at it, look at that judicial review was done there. People are being told now that they're not born Irish. They're born British, and they have to go about and try and change that themselves. Right? And then also...
Are you going to talk to me about Brexit this morning?
Yes, but this is Brexit. This is the whole point, because see, if you go by the Good Friday Agreement, it has to be... Both sides of the community have to agree to any change to the border, right? But since the Good Friday Agreement has come in, the Good Friday Agreement is being dismantled and being held by one side, being held ransom by the Protestant leaders, the DUP and also the Unionist Party from day one.
I'll tell you what, Daniel, stay there because I'm sure John Campbell's busy this morning. He's in Brussels. Right. He'd probably have to go. Let me ask him a couple more questions, then I'll come back to you. Other calls from you today. I see coming in 030 30 80 55 55. The principle of consent, John Campbell.
Yes, that's another one.
And that any of these changes would not happen without a new assembly getting up and going again, or indeed some type of group of MLAs in Northern Ireland actually deciding. Has that all gone out the window? Is the consent principle gone, or is it still in this deal?
No, although the customs has been the greater focus. And, you know, when I was talking earlier there about the DUP accepting that principle that there could be checks and controls if it is in the interest of the Northern Ireland economy and so forth, that comes with an important caveat for them. They say it must have some sort of democratic input from the citizens of Northern Ireland. So how would you do that? Do you do it through the Assembly? Do you do it through a Northern Ireland-only referendum? There could be a number of ways you look at it. First of all, I think what the DUP had talked about and would prefer is to say that Northern Ireland would have to choose to always opt in to any new EU regulations. That is something which would be subject to constant review, and they would sort of frame that as a unionist veto. On the other hand, you could say the status quo position would be Northern Ireland would always continue to follow EU rules unless there was a cross-community vote to say there wouldn't be, which might be framed as a nationalist veto. Another way to go is just to say, forget about Stormont and petitions of concerns and vetoes, just put it out to the people in terms of a referendum to say if this is an arrangement they would be happy with.
And I know you will be reluctant to get inside any politician's head, but can you explain to me even the logic behind what the former Secretary of State, Owen Paterson, said last night? He's reported to have gone ballistic when he heard about some of the terms of this deal, and he said, when would any other country ever give up part of its territory as part of trade talks?
I think there's a number of difficulties there for me. Is one, I don't know exactly what was briefed to Owen Paterson about what was or wasn't in the deal, and I don't know how well Owen Paterson may have understood what was or wasn't in the deal. So it's a bit difficult for me to get any sense of where he was coming from on that. It's really a question I suppose we would have to put directly to him.
Yeah, and we'd try to do so. Greg in County Armagh, John, says, I think this is fantastic. This is a new start for Northern Ireland. We can invent ourselves as a Monaco-style destination.
Well, we wouldn't get the weather anyway. The way the original backstop was framed, there was more possibility in that, because you would be in this position where if Northern Ireland was to be basically a member of the single market and the rest of the UK would not, that would mean Northern Ireland would be unique, because you could say to, say, an American company, if you want to get your products into both the EU single market and the UK with no new problems, checks or controls, come to Northern Ireland. We are the place where you can do that. Now, in terms of the bones of what we know about has been discussed, some of that would still exist, particularly around the single market stuff. But clearly, the customs side of it would be different, because if we were no longer a member of the EU's customs union, we would no longer have access to their tariff-free trade deals. We would have to be waiting for the UK to do new trade deals to get us the same sort of market access. So potentially that single market piece, which we would get under what's being discussed, could be helpful for some manufacturing businesses. But then there are further complications around the customs thing. And, you know, to be honest, many businesses in Northern Ireland liked the original backstop, which left Northern Ireland both in the EU's customs union and the single market, because it meant that we would continue to have access to those EU trade deals with places like, you know, Japan, Korea, Canada, wherever, whereas the UK trade deals at that stage were purely theoretical.
Okay, John Campbell, thank you very much indeed. Brian in West Belfast. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I don't listen much to the politicians this last couple of years on this Brexit problem, but I do listen to the farmers and the business people. And if there's an agreement, if there's anything saying today or saying next week, and the farming community and the business community think it's okay, that's good enough for me and it's good enough for a lot of people. Because the farmers put food on our tables and the business people make the economy grow and keep it going. And that's all.
Well, you've heard the vast majority of the different business organisations in Northern Ireland against key elements of what was proposed last week, for example.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying, Stephen. I take my thoughts from them. And
The DUP said they were disappointed by the business community's reaction.
Yes, because, see, that's what I'm saying. I listen to the professional people. Now, I listened to the Arlene Foster, I know she's on TV last night. I don't know how many times she used the word the constitutional question. As far as I know, maybe I'm wrong, but the Good Friday Agreement, it's embedded in the Good Friday Agreement that it goes to the people for any vote for any change in the constitutional. I mean, that's embedded in the Good Friday Agreement. And I've heard the DUP saying that so often all this last few years, the constitution doesn't matter, you know. People are not worried about the constitution.
Well, Owen Paterson, who's a Tory, he's a former Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, he wrote last night, concerns remain that the EU will seek to trap Northern Ireland permanently in the EU customs union by trying to reheat the failed ideas of customs partnerships or single customs territories that proved so disastrous for Theresa May. When would any other country ever give up part of its territory as part of trade talks, said Owen Paterson. It would be particularly absurd for Northern Ireland. 85% of sales by Northern Irish companies are in the UK. Just 5% are with the Republic, around 3% with the rest of the EU. How could we saddle Northern Ireland with EU costs and regulations and shut it out from trade deals which the rest of the UK would strike? It would shatter, he said, the Belfast Agreement's principle of consent and completely undermine Northern Ireland's status as an integral part of the UK. We must not go down this route. Now, the question is, are we going down this route? Are we going down this route today? Well, will the DUP be able to stop it? Will the DUP want to stop it?
Well, but I mean, he's looking in some... I don't know what Chris Brawley's looking into. I don't know. But, I mean, we don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows at the end of the day what this agreement's going to be, if there is going to be an agreement. So, Hark, I mean, that's politicians have been saying these things for 3 years, ifs, buts, and so forth. Nobody knows what's going on. Until there's that's why I go back to the business community and the farmers to see what's on the table and what's saying.
Okay.
And listen to them for the end of the day.
Okay, Brian, thank you. Siobhan and Lurgan. Morning, Siobhan.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
Doing okay.
Stephen, I just find at the minute it's absolutely worrying, anxious, feel very stressed out about the current situation. I'm a 38-year-old and I had to medically retire from my profession as a school teacher. As a result of that, I had to go down the route of going on benefits and I'm on a significant amount of medication. The issue with the Yellowhammer document worries me greatly with regards to medication and shortages, so I think there needs to be a deal. If I could have my way, I wouldn't want to have Brexit at all. The other thing that really severely concerns me is, at the minute, 10 DUP MPs are holding the rest of this country to ransom. The issue with the Irish Sea border does not create a break away from the UK in a constitutional manner. Everybody else is saying the same. The EUP have stirred up bigotry, hatred, division within our community.
And of course the DUP would fundamentally deny that, and they would say that they have the support of the vast majority of the unionist community. That is tested at the ballot box. They have a mandate. And they're trying to bring stability to Northern Ireland. And they would remind you that the result of the referendum was to leave, and they're trying to honour that.
Well, Stephen, they represent roughly 30% of the community here. There is other members of the community other than the Protestant Unionist Loyalist community. And at the minute, I just think that they are holding all the cards, which means that the rest of us are going to suffer as a result of this. Why are they getting special one-on-one meetings with Boris Johnson last night, while other
because they've got 10 MPs and Sinn Féin refused to sit and use their seats and use their votes in Westminster. So if you're from the nationalist community and you're wondering why the DUP have so much power, it's because the DUP is prepared to use its votes in Westminster and Sinn Féin are not.
Well, Stephen, if you look at
so take that up with Sinn Féin and don't blame the DUP on it.
Why would I take it up with Sinn Féin? I'm not discussing Sinn Féin, I'm discussing the DUP. And I'm also discussing what happened when Ian Blackford got up to make a speech in the House of Commons, who represents over 45 MPs from Scotland. The Tory party got up, jeered and walked out. So what difference do you think 7 MPs from Sinn Féin would make by going and standing in the circus that is Westminster? And in fact, if they did go in and use their power or their votes, they would be completely jeered at, they'd be sneered at, they would be blamed for trying to wreck Brexit. By all those other MPs.
Well, they are trying to wreck Brexit. That's their stated aim is they're against Brexit. They want the country to remain, which they're entitled to do.
Well, Stephen, so does the rest of the majority of people here. So does the rest of the majority of the people here whose voices are being completely denied, whose opinions are being completely denied. It's going to wreck this place. They're stirring up division. Brexit has been an absolute monster that has taken away 20 good years of work, of building bridges amongst communities, of building peace, of reaching out to one another, of not fearing each other. And all of a sudden, Brexit comes along, a Tory right-wing English nationalist ideology that does not give a damn or care about this place. You've Owen Paterson on this morning, you BRD members on regularly. Not one of them give a jot about this place. Not one of them lived through what has happened in this society. Not one of them Kerr to have read the Good Friday Agreement before they campaigned for Brexit. The border issue was never mentioned. The DUP are the only other party in this society that campaigned for Brexit. Every other party is against it. So that's what my point is about the DUP. I'm not in here rallying for Sinn Féin today. I am here saying my...
But you are a nationalist, right?
I am a nationalist,
okay.
Yeah.
So what you are getting out of this, all right, in a favourable way towards your political aim, some might argue, others would disagree, but what you are getting, for example, is Northern Ireland, the regulation for Northern Ireland's goods. So all of the rules in terms of conforming to specific specifications, what you are getting is Northern Ireland's goods will have to be the same regulatory alignment as the goods in Dublin, not in Scotland, not in Wales, not in England.
Stephen,
the DUP
Stephen,
have agreed
please,
in principle to aligning
Stephen,
our rules to aligning our rules with Ireland.
Right, Stephen. What about same-sex marriage? What about abortion laws? There are deviations on all sorts of legislation. There already is differences with regard to issues here with regulatory alignment regarding different things like agriculture. So I don't see what the big deal is. Now, at the end of
well,
the
you
day,
don't see as a nationalist what the big deal is. What I'm trying to say is at least the DUP have been prepared to compromise. Where's the compromise from the EU?
I believe in the Good Friday Agreement. I believe that we were in a good place, apart from the RHI scandal that brought the government down. And I hear regularly you blaming Sinn Féin for that also. Now, again, I'm not here as a cheerleader for Sinn Féin, but what I am saying to you is this is a party that is absolutely dripping in scandal. We've got RHI, we've got NAMA, we've got Red Sky. Gone are the days where the DUP should be getting to decide and dictate to the rest of society.
Well, you say that you're not aligned. You say that you're not aligned to Sinn Féin, and yet here you are pointing out accusations about the DUP. You're not bringing up the fact that Sinn Féin are trying to protest against John Downey being even brought through our justice system in Northern Ireland. That you have politicians within Sinn Féin saying that a citizen shouldn't even be brought through a court in Northern Ireland.
Stephen,
you're not bringing that up, and yet you tell me
it would be for a court
to determine whether Mr. Downey did or did not break the law. Exactly,
Stephen,
but you have in Sinn Féin. But you've criticised the DUP, but I would just point out to you that
you're relying on my view with something completely
different. Let me finish the point. I would just point out to you that in Sinn Féin, you have a party which doesn't even want a man to go through a court process.
And they talk about equality and respect.
So they want soldier F to go through a court process in Northern Ireland. They want British soldiers to be tested in court as to their guilt or innocence. But it's someone that Sinn Féin knows, he doesn't even have to go through a court process because they like him.
Well, my opinion is,
where's the equality and respect in that?
Stephen, would you let me finish? Anybody who breaks the law should be put before the courts. Anybody who has done something wrong in the past should face justice. Families deserve, all families on all sides deserve truth and justice. If you're Soldier F, or if you're John Downey, or anybody else that broke the law...
We don't know who broke the law. My point is not whether someone broke the law, because we should not be interfering until justice takes its course. My point is questioning a political party who doesn't even want the judicial process to proceed to determine someone's innocence or guilt. That's my point. Let me bring in Stephen Farry from the Alliance Party, Jim Wells from the DUP. Morning to you, Stephen.
Morning.
Morning. Morning to you, Jim.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Is this a defining day, Stephen Farry, for Northern Ireland? Is this potentially a game-changing day for Northern Ireland?
Well, I wouldn't put it in those terms, because I think there's a lot of worried, concerned people still needing to see what is going to be emerging in terms of any potential Brexit deal, and also what's happening in terms of our own talk system and what's happening in terms of negotiations that were clearly happening in Downing Street last night with the DUP and the UK government. So there's a lot of moving parts in this regard. We've been through a lot in Northern Ireland. I think probably the historic day still remains the Good Friday Agreement, whenever that was concluded, because that was the big game changer.
There are some people suggesting that's now being dismantled.
Well, since then, we've seen a slide in our politics, and certainly from my point of view, there is no good or sensible Brexit. So anything that emerges, even if it is something that we can live with, we'll be doing so with a heavy heart, because it's not where we want to be. But I don't buy into this narrative that somehow we're going to be trapped inside some sort of customs union or customs territory. For me, and I think for many businesses, the closer that we can remain into the European Union, the better it's going to be, and we will still be, relatively speaking, in a better place compared to our colleagues in Great Britain. They're the ones who are perhaps taking the even bigger risk in terms of this so-called independent trade policy. I think we're far better being part of that European bloc of 500 million who can do better trade deals, because they have the sheer strength to get decent terms, whereas the UK will be foundering, running around, desperately trying to do any deal they can, and whoever we're negotiating with will know the weakness of the UK, and they will get the better terms. The closer we are, the better off we are.
So if we do enter some type of customs partnership now with the EU, how will we get out of it in the future if we want to?
Well, there will be, right throughout the negotiations, the backstop was only there as being the insurance policy pending the future relationship. Now, those choices can be made down the line, and there will be many, many triggers. The issue is the safeguards to ensure that for those people who see the hard Brexit as being damaging to Northern Ireland, that they have that basic protection. I don't foresee a situation where going solo will make any sense, but who knows what the future will bring. I'm satisfied that this is not a trap for Northern Ireland, but this may well be our lifeboat in some respects. But a lifeboat still not being part of the ship, I think that's an important distinction to make. And I say this without yet seeing what's emerging in terms of Brussels and precisely how this is going to work, because the backstop, as originally formulated, I understood. As you negotiate, things do tend to get watered down.
How does it feel, Stephen, to be a politician in Northern Ireland with no power or control over Northern Ireland's future?
Well, we've had a lot of influence on other pro-Remain parties in terms of shaping the European position in this regard. People talk about the backstop being something imposed by Europe or imposed by the Irish government, but it reflected the concerns that were articulated by local politicians, local businesses, local civic society, all who pointed out the dangers around the Good Friday Agreement and to our economy. We've had discussions with the European Commission, with Michel Barnier. I fondly remember the first discussion which the words, the position of concern were raised with him, and he went off and had a huddle with his officials while it was explained to him in French. So we've had that type of discussion and over events.
And Jim Wells, I know you're listening to this. Mm. The question today is, how far is your party going to bend? How much wriggle room are they going to give Boris Johnson in order for him to bend to the EU?
Well, first of all, Stephen, could I suggest you have John Campbell on for the first half hour of your programme for the next month, because he's the only person who I think can explain things clearly in a way the public can understand. Secondly, I think we're speculating on speculation here, but what I would say is, first of all, Ireland has made it very clear our view in the customs union, and I think the vast majority of unionists would support her.
She made her views very clear in regulatory alignment and then did a complete U-turn.
Yeah. But yes, no, but Stephen, the bit that you didn't give out a good coverage to any of the media was that we always said if there was democratic control over our situation, that would change things radically. And the
I'll play you all the clips if you want.
Yes, Stephen, but nobody homed in on the fact that Nigel very early on said that what's absolutely crucial here, that the Northern Ireland Assembly are some representatives of unionism at Westminster, can actually decide whether we go into any arrangement and if we can leave it after 4 years. And that's crucial, because remember, Stephen,
4 year thing's gone, Jim, isn't it?
Well, that would be totally unacceptable if there is no democratic input from the people of Northern Ireland on such a fundamental issue. Then that's an issue of deep concern, because the reality is, remember,
there might be democratic input, but what type of democratic input?
Well, the democratic input is that there would have to be, if the Assembly was restored, which you all hope it is, that the Assembly would have to vote on a cross-community basis to enter any agreement, and then after 4 years, on a cross-community basis, to stay in any agreement. Now, that's giving the people of Northern Ireland a direct control in something that's absolutely crucial to their economy.
But you refused to listen to the democratic will of the people of Northern Ireland in terms of Brexit. The democratic will of the majority of the people in Northern Ireland was to remain. So why are you more interested in the democratic will of the people of Northern Ireland now when it suits you, when you just passed off, brushed aside the democratic will of the people of Northern Ireland to remain in the EU?
How many times have I said to you, it was made very clear from the start, it was a UK-wide decision,
yes,
and it turned out to be a very clear UK-wide decision.
So why should it not be a UK-wide decision now as to what happens to Northern Ireland?
Because what is being tailored is specific to Northern Ireland. And is it unreasonable to ask for the people of Northern Ireland to have a direct input into something that affects them in perpetuity?
I guess your party has said that it is unreasonable to go for majority votes when it came down to same-sex marriage. You blocked the majority vote on that. Which way are you swinging today?
Stephen, as you know, unfortunately, that issue has moved on. And unless we get the Assembly restored by Monday, we will destroy the traditional view of marriage in Northern Ireland. But the point is, what we're saying is, we have a right as a community, the unionist community, to have a say in something that is so fundamentally affects our future. Now, what is wrong with that? I'll tell you the significance of it, Stephen, is if we have that mechanism that we can opt in or opt out, then the negotiations, and the really difficult negotiations, remember...
What about the nationalist community? What say should they have?
Well, the nationalist community will have a vote in that process. But the reality is that nothing will work in Northern Ireland unless the unionist community sign up to it. And as you
know, nothing will work in Northern Ireland unless the nationalist community also sign up to it.
Yes, but the point is, before the community opts into something, it has to agree to it. And the fact is that if we have that mechanism, then the trade talks, which apparently is the really difficult aspect of leaving the EU, that will concentrate minds, because they know that if the trade talks don't go well, we don't reach agreement with the rest of the EU, then the unionist community in Northern Ireland have the power to pull out of any arrangement. Now, that is a fundamental point that the people of Ireland have to have a democratic input.
Let me pause there. We'll take the news. The political commentator Alex Kane joining us this morning. And Arlene Foster, right at the heart of these negotiations, Alex, in 10 Downing Street, talking to Boris Johnson for hours over the last couple of nights.
She is, because, and which suggests that they do have enormous problems. And I think for the DUP, this is the big thing.
Steve. Or it would suggest they have enormous influence.
Well, I'm not sure they have enormous influence. Yes, they would have enormous influence. You know, you have enormous influence in politics when you're dealing with your friends, which, let's bear in mind, this is exactly what the DUP Conservative Party relationship is supposed to be. Yet the language we've heard, indeed, I think from the first backstop proposal in December 2017, the language we've heard from the DUP has been one of ongoing, constant concern. They keep on offering things, a backstop they didn't want, regulatory realignment, which they fudged about with. Now a referendum has been put into the mix somewhere. It's not going to happen, but it's been put in the mix somewhere. Now we've been told there might be some other shifts happening. This is exactly the sort of thing the DUP did the confidence and supply arrangement to avoid, Stephen. And they may be able to stop this. It is possible that a combination, maybe other bigger parliamentary figures in terms of the mathematics in Parliament, but it's still true that the DUP and some ERG people could stop this. But the worrying thing for the DUP is that first Theresa May and now Boris Johnson appear to be acting against their interests. And that's a problem for them, because even if there's another election, say Boris comes back with a majority, he doesn't beat them. What sort of situation are they in at that point?
So what do you reckon they're doing, Jim? Do you reckon they're going to... They've already given ground, as we know, on regulatory alignment, despite promising not to. Do you think they're going to give ground on customs checks? Alex?
Hello?
Alex, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I was saying that the DUP has already given ground on regulatory alignment, despite promising not to. Do you think they're going to give ground on customs checks, despite currently promising not to?
They may have to, Stephen. It's not that they want to, and I accept that, but they may have to. They may be presented with a fait accompli where they, and I remember saying to you a couple of years ago, that there may come a point where the DUP are presented with a very unpalatable choice, or something that's even more unpalatable.
And how do you think unionists should be feeling this morning, Alex? And how do you think nationalists should be feeling?
I think unionists will be feeling concerned, because it's the existential question, Stephen. It's been raised by many people, both inside the unionist camp and outside the unionist camp. Can ultimately unionists in Northern Ireland trust a British government, particularly a Conservative government, to protect their interests? An increasing number of the unions, even in the DUP, I have a lot of, Jim will know this, I have a lot of friends across the DUP, and they are telling me that they are concerned. And I know many Ulster unions, and TUV and TUP, who are also very concerned.
Well, what are the DUP's options?
They don't really have options. That's the problem, Stephen. In a case like this, when the bigger political national interests of the United Kingdom come up against the smaller regional interests of the DUP, I'm sorry, the DUP will always lose that particular battle.
But isn't the key there in the United Kingdom that, you know, Boris Johnson will be wanting to do nothing to jeopardise the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland's place in it? Will he not?
Well, that, I think instinctively, like Boris Johnson, oddly enough, like David Cameron, like John Major, all of these people are prime ministers. They don't want to lose part of the United Kingdom. No prime minister ever wants to see part of the country they're ruling diminished. But the fact is, Boris Johnson knows from the internal opinion polls and very deep down drilled opinion polls within the Conservative Party that there's a very large percentage of Conservative voters who don't care about Northern Ireland. And given a choice between leaving the European Union and protecting Northern Ireland, will say, oh, no, let's leave the European Union. And that, to Boris, well, part of his emotional instinct, and he does have this sort of Churchill's view on all of this, but while he may not want to lose part of the United Kingdom, he also wants to win a general election. He wants to deliver. He does not want to be replaced and see someone like Nigel Farage and the Brexit Party come in and the Conservative Party split down the middle, and that's it, over 300 years of history gone. He does not want that to happen either. He too, in the same way that Arlene, and I accept it's a difficult choice, she has a very difficult choice with some very unpalatable choices coming up, but so too is Johnson. He has to decide what's more important to him, the DUP or what, 10 million people who vote for the Conservative Party and 5 or 6 who might want to vote for the Brexit Party. He has to put all of that in the mix.